Last night, several months ahead of the original schedule and 3 days ahead of the revised one, the official summary of the urgently awaited Kerner Commission report was made public. They were 12,000 of a total of some 200,000 words, reporting the work of the National Advisory Commission on Civil Disorders, headed by Governor Otto Kerner of Illinois, and set up at the peak of last summer's riots by President Johnson. The report asks three questions. What happened? Why did it happen? And what can be done to prevent it from happening again? The answers will undoubtedly provoke considerable controversy for a long time to come. Tonight, to comment on reactions from part of the minority community, we have here in New York Roy Innes, Associate National Director of CORE and former head of the Harlem Division. Basil Patterson, a Democratic liberal state senator from New York's 27th District and former president of the Harlem branch of the NAACP. And Ted Poston, for 26 years, reporter for the New York Post. In the Boston studio of WGBH, joining me in the questioning is Jerome Amente, a staff writer for the Detroit News and a former staffer of the Newark News. Mr. Amente is studying urban affairs for 1 year as a Nieman Fellow at Harvard. We'll be talking back and forth, Boston and New York, throughout the course of this special segment on Newsfront. Gentlemen, let me just ask you to open generally. If you could give us a reaction, your initial reaction to what you have been able to digest of this report so far. Is it a good thing? Is it too strong, too weak? Does it go far enough? Senator Patterson, how would you characterize it?
It seems that I've read all this before and I've heard all of it before. And I don't know how other people are going to react to it, but I know as a member of the black community, as I read through it, I was getting a little angry, frankly. I haven't heard that reaction from anybody else, but I noted from some friends of mine who I had a chance to briefly discuss it with this evening, they shared my views. I'd point out one thing very quickly in the report, something that just leaped to my mind because I was helping one of my youngsters the other night with the Gettysburg Address. It sounds like the Gettysburg Address. It's over 100 years ago. If you don't mind me quoting from it, it says, "It is time now to turn with all the purpose at our command to the major unfinished business of this nation. It is time to make good the promises of American democracy to all citizens, urban and rural, black and Puerto Rican, and everything else." We've heard all of these things before. Now, I know it's very fine that this commission of 11 men come back and they make this kind of report, but I'm afraid in our community, we're waiting for performance, not a discussion of what the causes of unrest are and what the causes of deprivation and ghetto life are. We're waiting to see some performance, because all this represents to me, frankly, is a re-enunciation of things that the people in the black community have been saying as long as I've been alive, and I've read that they've been saying a lot longer than that.
Mr. Innes, could we have your view?
This report reminds me of a recent book on the black-white problem in America, Silverman's book, Crisis in Black and White. What he did basically was to say, as a white man, what many black artists have been saying before. This report has said what many blacks have made an analysis, what many blacks have made before. I suspect it will legitimate those analyses now that they've been made by a white commission. I will hope, though, that in terms of solutions, that this country look to the black community to find solutions for their own problems.
So you're saying, in a sense, it represents progress because now you have elements of the white community saying what the black community had been saying.
And the only time America accepts anything, an analysis, is when it's done by whites.
Yes. Mr. Poston?
Well, of course, as a newspaper man, I've seen a number of reports, but I do think there is some importance to this report. I think it is directed mainly at the white community. And someone is going to have to get through to the white community. I think it's aimed at trying to lessen or narrow the chasm between the races because it is growing greater. Mr. Innes and I would disagree probably on whether that benefits or not. But I do think that we are facing a very dangerous situation, a situation which a lot of people are not aware. They don't realize how close we are to clashing on this. And if it gets through to the white community, I think it will be helpful.
Yes, Mr. Amente, I wonder if you have a question for our panel from Boston.
Well, yes. I noticed that one of the major recommendations of the summary is a demand and a suggestion that the communications media start talking to the Negro, the black community, to establish a dialogue. I'm wondering if this is possible. Who do we talk to? Who are the leaders? Where do we start first?
You know, I just can't buy that old question about who are the leaders in the black community. The leaders in the black community are like the leaders in any community, any time in the history of mankind. The same problem you had in identifying the leaders in America in 1775, the same problems you have now. If you want to find the leaders, you'll find the leaders.
If I may add to that, Roy, it doesn't much matter who the leaders are. What really counts is what they're saying. And the same statement has been coming for all these years. I recall back after the so-called riots in Harlem, and they had a TV special on another station. And they had James Farmer, Bide Rustin, Cleveland Robinson, and myself. And the question was, who speaks for Harlem? And it never mattered who spoke. It was what was the message, and the message was the same thing. So it's never really mattered who were the leaders, if the message is the same.
Well, if I'd laid out, I would go back to Art Balkwall. And I think this is one of the dangers we face in this whole situation. Balkwall, in one of his recent columns, wrote that Negro leaders are not born. They are made by CBS and NBC.
On Channel 13?
But Ted, does it matter if the message is the same? If the clear and compelling message that's coming through is the same, what difference does it make who's saying it?
Yeah, the fact
I
is
haven't
Basil,
found any great divergency between right. what Roy Innes is saying and what I'm yeah. saying.
See, Basil, these guys really, by the leaders, they warn the guys who are saying the things that they want to hear. And they will find the leaders and they will create those leaders who can echo the kind of solutions that they have been trying to force on us for centuries.
I don't think it's that simple. I think both radio, television, and newspapers, to get in any of these media, the most outrageous statement, the more outrageous the statement, the easier it is to be publicized and hailed as a Negro leader. Now, I think that all the media bear responsibility in this. We build up people, and then all of a sudden, we build them up out of nowhere, and then all of a sudden, we're frightened at the things that they say. But we still play that on. And I think there should be more regulation, self-regulation of all media.
Well, let me just
say
ask.
That, right yeah, on that ahead, point. Bill. Just before the program started, and Mr. Krause mentioned to us that there was some thought initially that this program would confine itself pretty much to the report on the news media, I mentioned to you that I had attended a conference, and you had attended that conference that was held over the School of Journalism, if I recall, at Columbia
yes.
University some months ago, and I haven't seen any results of that conference. And at that time, what the news media attempted to do was to bring people from the black community, from the Puerto Rican communities in New York City, together with TV, radio, and the press. Have you seen any marked change?
Well, there has been some changes. I think they are getting an awareness. But the mere fact that they met there, that they discussed this situation, because I do say, especially television, is one of the greatest dangers we have in this bill. Their media said the way they're able to bring a picture in with in it with no thought. And I do think that they have hired some people now. I do think they're not doing enough. But they're seriously studying what can they do. And out of that have come some newspapers' work and some preparation of getting people to understand what the community is, not waiting until they start riding.
Well, let me just ask Mr. Ometi in Boston if he would comment and step out of his role as a questioner for a moment with regard to your own experiences in Detroit in trying to bridge this gap, as you said, and find the people with whom you as a reporter could feel that you had the relationship that would provide you with information that was useful and not distorted.
Well, I feel almost as if I am a Negro speaking for the Negro, the black community. I am here as one newspaper reporter talking about my own problems. I was willing to talk. I did talk in the way of background. Prior to the riots in Detroit, I traveled around to Chicago, Cleveland, Milwaukee, Indianapolis. In each city, I made a point to get into the Negro areas, make contact with the leaders, walk the streets, go into the tenements, talk with the people. I'm not at odds with the panel tonight or with the basic idea. I'm asking, how can we go beyond the rhetoric of the black militant? How can we get to the people who are behind him? The press is being accused of being a barrier to dialogue, to whatever. I suggesting that perhaps the Negro leaders may be a barrier to the people who are standing behind them and are not being given a chance to talk. How do I get to the people beyond this?
Let me tell you how to get past the rhetoric of the black militant. You see, quite often the black militant will have a half an hour discussion with the press, and the press will select a very small portion of that discussion out of context. You see, and that is the rhetoric of the black militant. How about the serious solutions that many of the black militants are offering? How about dealing with that, listening to them and deal with that? After all, that black militant came from those same people. The people are his relatives, his mother, his father, his brothers and sisters. In fact, he is trying to echo and articulate much of the needs and some of the solutions that he has worked out with his people.
Is it your impression, and correct me, Mr. Ometi, if I'm wrong, are you saying that the black militant, in your view, does not necessarily represent the mass of the black citizenry in the community? Is this the implication that you are making in what you say, that by trying to get behind the so-called black militant leader, is this?
Well, no, I'm not saying that he does not represent them. He obviously represents one portion of the Negro community. In Detroit, the New Detroit Committee tried to find some solutions after the riot. It dealt with the so-called moderate, the militant. I don't like the labels, but they're there. Now, I am not satisfied with speeches. I am not satisfied. Mr. Innes, for instance, right now feels very strongly about the role that we're not playing, and I, in some ways, agree with him. And all I'm saying is, in a very hard, technical way, I want to talk, as a white man, I want to talk with the Negroes. I want to know, I have friends who are Negroes, and this again is, you know, some of my best friends are, I apologize for that, but what I'm trying to say is that I can talk to them, I can get the feel of this. Can I now go back to Detroit in June, go into the Negro area and talk? The National Commission talks about more Negro reporters, more Negro journalists. This is fine. But are we going to set up a system of isolation? I still want to be able to talk to the Negroes, and I don't want to have to just wait for a Negro reporter on my paper to do it.
Well, I would like to ask you a question. Does your paper attempt to maintain a dialogue with the Negro community? Does it? You can only discuss the problems of a city. Now, the Negro problem is an urban problem.
Yes.
Are they willing to go into conditions there and try to do something about these conditions before there is a riot? Do you have day-by-day contact with the community?
We do, actually. Now, in our own case, we have several Negro reporters, many of them in close personal contact in the way of friendship, in the way of writing with the Negroes. There have been just to give you a recap, for instance, in the months prior to the riot, we had a number of stories on Negro demands. On the hearings held by the local Civil Rights Commission, we have maintained story after story. Just as an example, I was interested in what the inside of a public housing project really was like, a Negro public housing project as it turned out to be. I spent several days talking with these people. We devoted a full-page spread to what the people in the project wanted to say. I can give you instance after instance of this. The thing that I'm concerned about is that I don't have the entree, and I'm afraid I have less of the entree now. I want to talk. I want to hear the leaders, but I want to get beyond them. I want to get into the houses, and I want to get to the people. Can I do this? Is it too late?
Mr. Ometi is answering his own question. He said he got into the public housing, and he interviewed the people. And I can tell you what happened in New York City yesterday. Early yesterday morning, I was driving, I think I had to go up to White Plains to court, and I heard the interviews that were conducted on 125th Street and 7th Avenue. May I mention another network? CBS Radio was interviewing people on the corner of 125th Street and 7th Avenue. That's the heart of Harlem, on the question of Romney having withdrawn from the Republican race for nomination for president. And they interviewed 8 people, and they made the comment that all 8 people knew that he'd withdrawn, though it had just happened the evening before, and they all had a comment to make. They had no problem about reaching the people on the street. And there certainly has never been any problem for the TV networks and the radio networks and the press to find out what was the reaction of the man in the street to the Adam Powell story. If they want to get it, there's nobody stopping them. You know, I find this to be the strangest thing. The question is one of motivation, of will. If they want to do it, there's nobody chasing them off the streets.
I think it's a phony argument, Basil. I'll tell you why. Look, I have read many histories of the American Civil War. I never read what the American people, you know, the people, the so-called people these guys are looking for, had to say about the struggle between the Americans and the British. We heard about Madison and Jefferson and Franklin and all these guys. The leaders, you see, the representatives of those people. How come when it comes to black people, all at once, everybody want to talk with the so-called people? We are all the people.
Well, let me move back to the specifics of the report, if I could for a moment, and talk in general terms about the impact of the report, in your view, on the white community. Some members of the white community have implied that this was pretty strong medicine, that the report implied that it was white racism that was responsible for the product of violence in these cities, when many white people were said to have charged that it was black racism that was the cause of violence. And I wondered, do you feel this report is strong enough in making accusations on the white community, and is it too weak in talking of black power as the other side of the coin?
Well, we're going to find out pretty quickly, aren't we? I heard your news report before we started, where they got the White House reaction. It said this report will receive very serious consideration. There's no legislation pending, but there is legislation pending. There's legislation pending right now in the United States Senate, and it's being cut to ribbons. These are the things that the black community is going to be watching, and the white community is going to be watching. Reagan is talking about leadership. I think there's a dearth of leadership in the white community. The president takes the report. I'm sure he had a copy of it before it was released to the press. That's the least we can expect that happened. And I would have suspected that if he was going to exercise the leadership that he should have as president of the United States, that he would have had more of a statement to make other than it shall receive serious consideration. It strikes me that he's waiting to see what the reaction of other people in the country is before he takes any position whatever. And that's not leadership.
Well, I do think this report was addressed mainly to the white community, surely more so. And I think it is important that any official report should say that the hub of this problem is really white racism. That you've exploited these people, you've ignored them, you haven't given them any sense of dignity. Now, how far this goes over, how far it gets over with the white community is another thing. I think it's almost too late for it to have any real effect. We are really spending our money building up arsenals and getting ready to do it their way next time. But if it has any effect on the white community, if it'll make them stop and look and realize what a Negro is up against in this country, then it could have some effect.
Let me say that after the report made a good analysis of the problem and pointed out that white racism was the cause of the disorder and the problem in America, I have to now disagree with the solution that they're offering. The solution is a call for actions to avoid a two-society nation. I happen to think that the only hope for this nation is a two-society nation, a recognition of what has existed ever since blacks and whites start habitating this land. The fact is we have to change the relationship between these two people. Not change the two society-ness of the nation, but change the relationship between them so that in the white society they control their institutions, in the black society we control our institutions.
You talk about this as a step toward eventual integration or as a final
situation?
I talk
about this as a step to save this nation from destruction, as the only real solution to this problem.
Permanently?
Well, I'm very pragmatic. I think that if you create a healthy situation, people will make a pragmatic decision sometime in the future in their own interests.
Of course, I disagree strongly with Mr. Ennis on this idea of apartheid.
No, it is not apartheid, by the way.
It is apartheid. You're not going to have separate but equal. They have made us live under that all of this time. I don't think there's any hope of getting anywhere by dividing the races and setting up a segregated situation. This drive of many of the black nationalists for resegregation, I think, is one of the worst things that could happen to this country.
This is such a gross oversimplification of some of the things that we are saying. We are not talking about segregation. We are not talking about apathy and any of these forms, those oppressive ways of controlling people in society.
Arose by any other name?
Roy, may I ask a question here?
We have just one minute, and I want to get one more comment from Mr. Almenty.
When you talk about
Mr. Patterson,
being segregation or apartheid, are you recognizing that today we have a Bundy plan for decentralization which recognizes that the black community would have control of its own schools? They're not calling that apartheid.
Let me get Mr. Almenty in from Boston, because we just have less than a minute.
Mr. Patterson, of all the recommendations in the summary, what is the most important one in the sense of something we should work for immediately? What has top priority of all the suggestions?
I'd say the whole thing has top priority, but I'll tell you one recommendation that struck me as rather interesting. When we take a look at the fact that the mayor of New York City, John Lindsay, was a vice chairman of this commission, and the commission comes out for a call for 6 million dwelling units for low and middle income families and a start of 600,000 this year, my only question then of John Lindsay would be, how many have you started in New York City since you've been mayor of New York? And I tell you that the answer is right now, the only thing I'm hearing them talking about is architectural design of housing, and I haven't heard anything about new housing or rehabilitation of housing starting in New York City.
Well, gentlemen, I want to thank you all. We're going to have much time in the future to talk about this, and undoubtedly, and we hope one effect will be that this report will stimulate talk for a long time. So thank you, Mr. Innes, Mr. Poston, Senator Patterson, and Mr. Almenty in Boston.